The sweet sound of sports you love from Sling. The collide of football pads. The squeak of shoes on a basketball court. The crack of the bat on a home run. The slice of skates cutting across the ice. But what about this one? That's the sound of all the sports you love, all at once. Starting at $40 a month. Experience it all live with Sling. Sling.
Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another Sunday night live stream. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers, joined by Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel, also my man Jerry Hamilton, the man, the myth, the legend, Jerry Hamilton. What's going on, fellas? How was the weekend? Happy Mother's Day, by the way, to everybody out there. Happy Mother's Day. Can't forget about that.
Absolutely. That's a big day for everybody. You know, you got to take care of the mothers, of course. And that's why I'm up here in Dallas, spending time with mom. Going to be a great time, you know, rest of the weekend, headed back down to Austin tomorrow. Going to make a couple stops on the way. Jerry, I know you're out and about this weekend as well. But back in Texas, talk about a little bit where you'll be this week as well.
Yeah, I'm back in Texas. Going to be on the road in the Houston area this week. I may go check out Jackson Christian spring game in Port Neches down in the Golden Triangle tomorrow evening. Going to go out and see some guys in the Houston area this week. And that will coincide with the Texas staff is hitting Houston hard this week. That's going to be an area of emphasis this week. I know from what I've heard texting some kids, I believe the Texas DB coaches, Blake Gideon, Terry Joseph, will be out to see Caleb Chester, Cade Phillips, this week. I know Chris Jackson's going to go see Kelshawn Johnson this week, which means he'll also go see Andrew Marsh and some of those other guys. So you figure Blake Gideon will stop it in Galveston Ball, go check out Jonah Williams, even though that looks like an A&M OU battle. So the Texas staff will be out and about on the road. Got some news on quarterback, by the way. I posted that this morning on OnTexasFootball.com, and subscribe to OTF to OnTexasFootball.com, be an OTF OG member for $39.95. That's $20 off annual subscription. We've had 1,000+ people join as OTF OGs. Somebody asked how many miles on the car this year. I'm at 30,480 for the year, which my year started in July when I got a new car. So we're May. So we're gonna have a big year, man. But that's what we do here. Not quite Major League Baseball scout miles. Those guys will put 50 to 60 on a car in a year. So it's a little bit on quarterback recruiting, guys, real quick. Is AJ Milwee is scheduled to be in Saraland tomorrow to spend time with Jeff Kelly, Saraland head coach, watch KJ Lacy in practice. Duncanville had three coaches. Texas had three coaches at Duncanville Tuesday. Chris Jackson, Jeff Banks, and AJ Milwee. Went and watched Keelan Russell throw on Tuesday as well. And then we've got some dates for the top two 2026 guys. Dia Bell will be May 20th at American Heritage in Plantation, Florida. Then AJ Milwee will jump on a bird, cross the state of Texas, go all the way to the West Coast and watch Troy Hune throw May 22nd. And that'll be just days before both of those guys go to Texas Elite Camp June 1st. Which I think that will be the deciding factor on quite possibly who the 2026 quarterback is going to be in the Texas class. Those are the two guys that have offers right now. Both of those guys, Dia Bell from American Heritage, son of Rajah Bell, Troy Hune, will be at Texas Elite Camp June 1st. Why is that date important? KJ Lacy committed at Texas Elite Camp last year. June 3rd, I believe the day was. So the quarterbacks will be off the board early. One of them, Jared Curtis from Nashville, is already committed to Georgia. South Carolina has their guy. Three, four other quarterbacks, highly recruited, have committed. So I do think we'll see Texas get their 2026 quarterback in June. The other interesting thing is both those guys, as of Thursday, this could have changed since Thursday. That was the only visit they had set up at the 1st of June was to Texas. So are both those guys waiting to see who Texas takes? If you follow the visits, that's what that would indicate. With Dia Bell, Penn State, LSU, very much in the picture there. He likes Alabama. I don't know which direction Alabama's going at 26 quarterback. But speaking of Dia Bell, LSU and Penn State OCs were out the first day of the spring evaluation period. They could come out. with Torrey Hune. He's picked up a lot of offers recently, Clemson, Arkansas, I believe Florida State maybe. But I still think Texas is in a pretty good spot there. So we'll see what Steve Sarkisian decides here coming up in 2.5 weeks and see if they close out the 2026 quarterback. Texas has one commitment in the 26 class, Racine Guillory, the running back from Aledo. Jeff Banks, Chris Jackson, and maybe Tashard Choice are by Aledo last week, by the way. Texas very much wants Caden Finley, too, son of JerMichael Finley, who just graduated from Texas. We're going to have JerMichael on Coffee and Football Tuesday. So Texas staff out and about on the road in Dallas last week, Houston, at Houston area a lot this week. Kenny Baker will go see Chase Sims, I believe. Go see a couple other defensive linemen, some younger guys in the Houston area as well. So Texas staff, 2 more weeks out on the road in the evaluation period. That shuts down May 25th.
Hey, Jerry, can I ask you just real quick about the H-Town area? Is there a strength in that 2026 recruiting class as a position-wise in Houston? Like, does Houston have, like, a strength of a position coming up in these next 2 or 3 recruiting cycles?
I think defensive back in 25. I mean, okay. I think that was a strong one with Devin Sanchez. Jonah Williams, no matter if you think he's a safety or linebacker long-term, he's being recruited as a safety. Kobe Sellers at corner. Caleb Chester at corner at Fort Bend Marshall. Rod, the 26th safety at Marshall, Isaiah Williams will be. He's as good as there is. I mean, wow. He is a elite talent. So I think Cade Phillips at Hightower. I really think defensive back. Offensive line's a little better in Houston. Dallas has been way ahead there, but I think North Shore at defensive back is really, really North Shore, I should say. Houston area is really strong at defensive back in the 25 and 26 class.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, we tell them we got to wish you a late happy birthday, man. I don't know if we've done that on the channel yet. Jerry, when was your birthday officially?
It was Friday. I was on the road in Port Charlotte. Yeah.
I celebrated. I talked to Jerry on Friday. Jerry never even mentioned his damn birthday at all. This is the problem with dudes. Dudes don't mention, they don't talk about their birthdays. Women celebrate their birthdays like a week in advance and then like 2-3 weeks after the birthday, whole damn month, the person's birthday. You can be really good friends with a dude and dude don't even tell you that it's his birthday. So, Jerry, happy belated birthday from the Owen Texas football family.
I celebrated my 30th for the 19th time Friday. So, by the way, in this business, what do you do to celebrate your birthday? See a 6'4", 280-pound, 4-star defensive tackle at Port Charlotte High, Myron Charles. That's in our business, that's a good birthday, man. Thursday night at Punta Gorda at TT Tiki's for dinner was an unbelievable sunset after driving across Alligator Alley after leaving Dia Bell School. But that was a good birthday, seeing one of the top defensive tackles in the country. And by the way, Texas has a legit shot there.
Wow. CJ, I mean, this is just guys being dudes. Hey, I mean, Jerry doesn't even tell us it's his B-Day. He just quietly celebrates it on the down low. Did you wish Jerry a happy B-Day on Friday?
We sure did. We were up there at the Longhorn live stream having a good time. Coffee and football as well. So, I mean, we got a little double dip there. Of course, Jerry's out on the road, so we didn't get to celebrate all the happy birthday wishes with him. But, Rod, to your point, I mean, I'm back home and Allen here. I met up with a couple high school friends, and that's, you know, guys being dudes is true, you know. I go out with some friends I haven't seen in years. And yeah. I come back, parents want an update on how they're doing. I don't know what they're doing. I just know we had a good time together. That's all it is, really. That's just part of being a guy, I guess.
It is, though. I know it's a random story. We'll get back to the questions here. I had a friend of mine. He had a baby shower, right? Go over to hang out at the baby shower. We go out there, hang out for like an hour and a half. We talking ball, having a great time. Like you said, drinking, guys being dudes, kicking it. The ladies are doing their own things. So it was one of those showers where the guys and the gals come. And I get home, my wife is like, what's the name of the baby? I'm like, I have no idea, actually. We were hanging out, kicking it in the backyard, having drinks, having a good time. I really couldn't even tell what the name of the baby was. I apologize about that. See, I had forgotten. That's just guys being dudes. So, ladies, don't blame us. We get distracted doing a lot of other stuff. All right. But thank you. Hey, CJ, you also been on the road. I know you obviously drove up to Dallas to go see your people, but you're driving back down to Austin. And I know you're making stops in between all the time because you're kind of like Jerry, man. You can't help yourself. You see there's some talent out there. You got to try to get your eyes on it. You want to get eyes on that talent. Anybody you've seen or any places you've been or planning to go that'll get some folks some recruiting updates around there?
Yeah, well, I see Jerry taking over the road right now, so I got to get my miles up as well. Haven't quite hit 30,000 this year, that's for sure, but We're on the way up there. We got a couple of stops planned for tomorrow. We'll see where, if I'm able to make a stop tomorrow somewhere in DFW in the morning. We're checking on a potential visit there. But on the way back down to Austin, I'll be stopping at University High to check out a number of big-time 26 and 27 targets down there that will be big-time prospects in the state of Texas. Of course, Devondre Kirkland is one that visited Texas earlier this year, as well as London Smith, one of the top 2026 wide receivers in the Central Texas area. You look at it, you know, the Central Texas wide receivers per cycle, there's always that one guy that really steps up, whether it's a Garrett Wilson or you know, Michael Hudson kind of territory. London Smith to me is kind of that guy in the 26 class. We'll continue to see if that remains the case as everything develops down the road. But right now I want to get a good look at what he can bring to the table. And obviously on Friday I was at McKinney High as well, checking out Riley Pettijohn, the really talented 2025 linebacker that Texas is all over at the moment. He's got three official visits set up for the month of June, USC, Ohio State, and the Longhorns. Texas pushing. One thing that I thought was really interesting whenever I was talking to him is his last visit was for the spring game in Austin. Of course, got to see the Texas scrimmage in person, in the crowd, everything that goes on along the lines of that. But he said, you know, Elijah Bo Barnes was in his ear trying to get him to commit on the spot that day. I thought that was really interesting. Of course, we've talked about, you know, which of these guys in the class are going to be those vocal leaders that help build the 2025 class. We'll see. Texas, you know, has its quarterback. It's got some other really talented pieces, but we're still waiting on that guy to take the reins and be that guy to help recruit. Right now, Elijah Bo Barnes is really trying to help build that linebacker class and getting Riley Pettijohn in the fold. He'll, of course, take his official visit to Austin June 14th through 16th. So a lot going on. He expects to have a decision in the month of July. So before his senior season kicks off, after his official visits, look for that July period, a time that in which we've seen Texas go on a number of runs under Steve Sarkisian to build their classes since he's arrived.
I got a question for both of you guys, and it's related to a question here in the chat from E. Kim, and I think it's an interesting point, who says Texas needs to make Fort Bend Marshall a pipeline school. What are the pipeline schools right now in the system? Where, because it seems like different coaches, different regimes, you know, they'll have certain programs that will be obviously marquee programs in the state producing high-level talent, and then you'll see multiple guys from that high school program end up going to Texas, and then it seems like the pipeline of sorts develops. What's the pipeline school from Houston? What's the pipeline school from Dallas right now in on the Texas roster? What is it?
It's got to be Duncanville in Dallas, right?
Yeah, Duncanville, DeSoto. I almost call it the district. It needs to be the pipeline district. Blake calls it the District of Doom. That's Duncanville, DeSoto, Cedar Hill, Dallas Skyline, Lancaster's now in it. Waxahachie's in there. Mesquite Horn just moved in there. I mean, Texas could get 5-6 guys out of that district this year.
That's crazy. That's wild.
I mean, so and I haven't run the numbers, but that might be a story. How many players from that district are currently on the Texas roster, CJ? Yeah. That might be something me or you attacks this week. But to me, it's the whole district. That is the most talented district in the state of Texas right now, especially with Mesquite Horn and Lancaster moving into that district. But that is one. Look, I like North Crowley in the future. I think where the population growth is south of Fort Worth, kids – kind of not going to the Fort Worth public schools. I think North Crowley is going to have a lot, especially as long as Coach Gates is there, a lot of kids. Houston area is interesting. It's just changed a little bit. I mean, the easy answer is North Shore, but I'm just here to tell you. I'm just here to tell you guys, North Shore is talented, but they aren't as talented as they were a decade ago. They have great coaching and great culture. And that's sustained through multiple head coaches now. They have a great program, and they maximize that program. They're not as talented as they were in the mid-2010s, 12, 14, 15 range. They're not close to a Duncanville or DeSoto in terms of high-level Division I players. So things have changed. You know, Golden Triangle, not what it used to be in a lot of areas. Fort Bend has always been the tougher area for Texas, Rod. I mean, that's where – I think if you looked at where is Texas missed most on guys, and I'm not talking Sark. I'm talking over the last decade, 12, 14 years. Mm-hmm. Fort Bend is the area to me where Texas, if Bobby would say has been the weak spot, and I would agree with that. There's been too many guys come out of Fort Bend that ended up being really good. Maybe they weren't the national prospects, but everybody doesn't have to be a national prospect. But Fort Bend, to E. Kim's point, Marshall is the school. They are one of the best track schools in the country. They're going to be the fastest school in Fort Bend ISD for sure. They have the most skilled guys, and Ridge Point is ultra talented. And Rod Ridge Point, that's where Sean Rogers' daughter goes. That's where TJ Ford's son went. That's where all the in Duke Kalu. That's where all the pro athletes. A lot of those guys live in Siena, and Siena feeds in the Ridge Point.
Okay,
so those are the two schools in the Fort Bend area ISD. But I think that's the area for Texas. And now look, that could change. I mean, how many high schools does Cypress have now? But they're too spread out. That talent's too spread out. So Fort Bend for me.
I like that. That's good stuff. CJ, you got any thoughts? I think that district from Duke, I've been tracking like how many players from that DFW area, second most fertile recruiting area for NFL draftable prospects in the last 5 years. I got to go back and dive a little deeper and see how many of those guys are from that district of doom that Jerry's talking about there, CJ, in that DFW area, because it might be even more concentrated than we think with that kind of talent, that being the pipeline.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you can even move north a little bit. Texas has had success at Prosper. They've had success at Lovejoy, that success at Allen. Of course, now they're fighting to get back into Louisville with Michael Fasusi a little bit. You know, there's a number of spots in that DFW area that Texas, of course, we've talked about, has dominated in recent cycles when it comes to the big guys. Denton Ryan specifically, you know, a trio of guys that have really helped the Longhorns, you know, return to prominence on the national level. Couple spots in the Central Texas area that Texas has a number of players on roster from specific high schools. Waco Connolly is one. Trey Wisner was there before moving up to DeSoto his senior season. Jelani McDonald, Kobe Black. They'll have a few more in the 26 and 27 classes coming up. We'll see exactly if Texas is able to get back in there as well. But good start certainly with three former cadets on campus right now. And, of course, Westlake. I mean, it's hard to ignore the pipeline that Austin's or that Texas has been able to have just down the road at Austin Westlake. Of course, the big ones, Ethan Burke, Colton Vossett, Connor Robertson, Michael Taft. But of course, Texas just added a walk-on kicker who nailed a 60-yard field goal in the middle of in a regular season game from Westlake. Yes, absolutely. But they've got a 2026 defensive lineman that I think has a really good chance to become a big P4 prospect at the end of the day. Maddox Flint is the name, if anybody's wondering. Really talented guys. Recruitment's starting to blow up a little bit at the moment. But that's a spot, I mean, it sneaks up on you. If you go through that Texas roster, and this will be a fun dive, I think, sometime this week, Jerry. But, I mean, they've probably got five or six guys on roster at the moment.
Well, let's we can go through that real quick and then there's a story on it. But Jonte Cook, Trey Wisner, DeSoto. Cam Williams, Colin Simmons, Alex January, Duncanville to start, right? I mean, so there you go. Five guys to start. But if you look in this 25 class, Elijah Barnes, Dallas Skyline committed. Texas would take Devin and Jordan Coleman right now, and I think Texas probably leads for those guys. Obviously, DeCorian Moore at Duncanville. We'll see what happens with Keelan Russell at Duncanville, right? They have tons of young kids over there. Then you go over to DeSoto. Texas passed on some of those guys this year, but Booby Feaster in 27, there's a lot of guys coming out of there. Mesquite Horn has Lamont Rogers, four-star offensive tackle. So if you just go down, and I'm telling you, Cedar Hill's got two or three young defensive linemen that'll probably be offer guys for Texas. One of them is a 275-pound running back that'll move the D-line this year. So that district, Waxahachie, number of guys, right? I mean, Jaquan Snell, who Texas has already offered, a young kid. And those schools are getting move-ins. Those schools are getting a lot of move-ins, too. That's an area that's continuing to grow. Lancaster has an Emmanuel Choice, the wide receiver, the four-star wide receiver, who, by the way, Chris Jackson went by to take one last look at him last week. And Lancaster will have other guys as well. So you can go down the list. Somebody said Denton Ryan. Absolutely. Denton Ryan, Denton Geyer. Those two Denton schools are loaded. As well. And then just look north of I-20, Dallas South Up Cliff right there as well. But that district of doom, I mean, there's a chance that Texas will have 10 guys from there on the roster at one point in time coming up.
That's crazy. Yeah, that is unbelievable. DFW area, like I said, only Atlanta, guys. Really only that Atlanta area. Atlanta metro area is producing NFL players at the rate of DFW.
Rod, I went to two sectional track meets there last week, okay? And this will lead into a question about Kevin Wynn. Atlanta area is ridiculously down.
Yeah.
I just don't even know what else to say, guys. I mean, like, that's why Georgia is the best job right now in college football, because they're producing per capita in an Atlanta metro area just so many NFL guys, and it's at every position.
Yep.
It's not like it's void. Like in South Florida, South Florida's been void of quarterbacks. Not saying Teddy Bridgewater, Lamar, but I'm talking in numbers.
Yeah.
They've been void of quarterbacks in that area. In South Florida, Dade and Broward, the two most talented neighboring counties in the country for years and years. But that Atlanta metro, I'm just telling you now, I was at the track meet Saturday in Milledgeville, Georgia. And so that had – that I can't go through all the teams, but, I mean, every kid that walks by, you say, you look up the school, make sure he's not a Power 5 kid. I mean, that's just – it's really talented in Atlanta. And that's why Kirby's got such a – he's got the best job going in recruiting right now, because that area is so talented. Then Florida's to the south, North Carolina, South Carolina to your east, and Alabama, Nick's no longer there, to your west.
Yep.
I mean, that's a plum recruiting job, especially with Clemson slipping a little bit. They're going to get their guys, but it's harder for them now that Kirby's at Georgia than when Mark Richt was there.
Yep.
When Georgia slow played Deshaun Watson. I mean, okay. So that got Dabo going. It's changed with Kirby there, but that area is Rod. I don't know. You'd have to see it to believe it.
No. I've been tracking it, and I mean, honestly, like I said, DFW is number two in metro areas producing NFL talent since 2020. But Atlanta is far and away. Atlanta has a gap between them and number two. Like there is a sizable gap between them. So at least the number tracks what your eyes are telling you, Jerry, no doubt about it. So there's a reason. And what we'll get to see, right? You'll get to see this season, Georgia versus Texas. All right. You got the two most fertile recruiting states, arguably in the country, if you want to say that, but definitely the most fertile metro areas between DFW and then Atlanta metro area. So I totally believe.
And I want to say one thing I forgot, because what thought got me going on that thought was Kevin Wynn. Somebody asked about Kevin Wynn, the D lineman out of Greene County, the 4-star D lineman. I had a great interview with him. That's on Texas Football YouTube channel. It was him and KJ Lacey. I put those back to back in the video. Kevin Wynn will visit June 14th through 16th. I think Texas is going to end up having a legitimate shot at him. I just think Kenny Baker's done a really good job there. I think the kids were, you know, he's a small town kid, but I do think, just talking to him, I think Texas is going to have a legit shot. I'm not saying they're going to get him. He hasn't been on campus before. But I do think that visit's going to go very well, and that Texas is going to very much be in that decision-making process. But my point on him was this, and I think Florida State, South Carolina are 1-2 because he's never been to Texas. And I think Georgia is running 3-B with Texas as 3-A just because there's so many D linemen in Georgia that maybe Georgia didn't push hard at the beginning for him, and they were messing around out of state. But Georgia's going to want him, and I'll say this. This is one reason why I think you're going to see Georgia make a big push on Kevin Wynn. Kirby does not want Texas getting traction on guys Georgia likes. Ooh. That happened with Daniel Calhoun last year on the offensive line. That thing came down to Georgia and Texas. Kid wasn't going to Texas. Kirby just wasn't going to let that happen. So that is what Choice and Kenny Baker, that's the battles they're going to be in for these top guys. So like a Devin Williams, the corner from Buford, who's coming in June 21st through 23rd for an official visit, he's committed to Auburn. He doesn't have a Georgia official, but there's so much talent. You can get really, really good players out of there, but the OLs and the DLs, Georgia is going to make it very difficult on Texas to get traction on those guys that are good enough. Those are the big battles that Nick had with Kirby in Georgia, that over the years Auburn has had with Georgia, but it's different with Kirby there than Mark Richt. I'll say that it's tougher. It's tougher.
Yep. No doubt. No, Sark definitely trying to get more roots and trying to get more connections in those SEC states. That's pretty obvious in the way he's constructing and building the coaching staff. There's no doubt about that, too. And he stated that openly. Even matter of fact, we'll talk about that later in the show. Sark is doing the talking tours, so he's had several interviews, and he's talked about how they intentionally and deliberately want to be recruiting SEC territories, SEC states. He knows that's the future for them, and that's where he wants to recruit.
And look, I'm not trying to take this over, but at all. But I was down in Florida, and somebody asked about Florida. I'll say this, Rod, and you'll appreciate this. I've never been in a school in Florida where somebody didn't run 4.5. I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's just like those kids are fast without understanding how to run. You know, I mean, it's just like a different now. It's a little different. So somebody asked, is Florida not as talented? No, Florida is just – they just had the most guys drafted from that state. Even though IMG had a couple, they still would have had the most out of any state. Florida's ridiculously talented. Now, they're more raw.
There you go.
So you only play – here's one of the things for the fans that don't understand high school football and middle school football in Florida. It's up to the counties whether you play middle school football. So, like, Duval County up in Jacksonville plays middle school football. But down south, Dade Broward, they don't play middle school football. It's all youth football through 13 years old, 14 years old. So these kids are super raw, and the athletic periods are not there at most places. It's not the same setup. Some people saw on TexasFootball.com some of the weight room photos I put out. It's just not a moneymaker in Florida. Texas has this thing down. Georgia's copied Texas, right? Ohio does a great job. There's some states that do a great job making money through high school football booster club, and the setup is there. It's not there in Florida. It's not the high school coach's fault. It's the state. And it's hard to – if you just pick and choose where you're going to play middle school football, it's going to be hard to have a product that makes money long-term in that state too. So those kids are super raw, but they're super hungry coming out of that state. Super hungry. Florida is a great state to recruit in.
Yeah. I love how every state has, like, their own thing that sets them apart recruiting-wise. And Jerry, I think you and CJ kind of get into this stuff when you guys start talking recruiting. No state is investing more in their high school football than Texas, right?
Right.
The paying the coaches, the weight, the facilities, right? All that. That's what Texas has over every other state.
It's the best the indoors, everything. I mean, you just drive anywhere in DFW alone, and I mean, some of those stadiums will be better or on par with what those kids will play in at the next level. And it's almost like, you know, growing up in Allen, you see that big stadium, you know, get built and you watch a couple games there. You're like, yeah, for the 15 kids on Allen every year that go D1, half of them probably won't be seeing as nice of a facility, an indoor, a weight room, a stadium, or a turnout at their games as what they saw in high school. It's crazy.
Well, like there are some Southland Conference schools out of state that used to say it's hard for us to recruit in Texas and bring a kid on our campus because it's a step down.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Look, so I put it in the categories. Texas is the best place to play Friday night football in America. Georgia's caught up. They've done a lot with their salaries, facilities. Ryan Nelson's not on here, but he lives in the Atlanta area. He'd be talking a lot about this if he was on the chat tonight. I think Texas is the best place to play Friday night football. You know, Florida just doesn't support it. I could go to a game on a Friday night, or I used to call games on Friday nights in South Florida, and there'd be 12 Division I prospects on the field and 1,500 people in the stands. Right? I mean, so it's just not – it's supported at the college level, but the high school level – maybe it's because of the beach. Maybe if you live by Miami, why in the hell are you going to a high school game? If you live in Fort Lauderdale, any of those places, I probably only did because I was getting paid to, honestly, when I lived in Florida. So I just don't think it registers if you're in Tampa. You're not going to high school football games unless you have a kid playing or something. So it's just a little different. But if you look at the per capita in the NFL this year, this is your point, Rod, why Sark's saying what he's saying. The top five states in NFL players per capita in the country are Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, Florida, and Alabama are your top five.
Yep.
What do all those have in common? They're all the five states east of Texas on I-10.
SEC, baby.
Texas is 10th on that list, and South Carolina, who doesn't have many guys, they're like eight. But for the per capita, there's a reason Ohio State, Notre Dame, everybody recruits in the South, right? It's where the best talent is, especially on the D line, and that's where the major, major battles are coming up for Texas in the next few years.
Yeah, no, man, that's good stuff. Good breakdown there, guys. All right, before we get back to it here, because I know we got some questions we want to get to here, and I want to get you guys' thoughts about Terrence Brooks's transfer portal destination. Looks like he's going to Illinois. That story broke. We'll get your thoughts about that. Also, Jerry, we didn't talk to you when the deluxe edition college football game, that the cover of the new college football game, the deluxe edition, was leaked the other day. There's Quinn Ewers shout out on there, as well as some other players. I want to get your thoughts about that too a little bit. Before we get going, though, I want to thank our wonderful sponsor for our Sunday night live stream. Special thanks to Joe Brown, ladies and gentlemen, your veteran mortgage professional. That's right. Joe has been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than three decades. Joe's a lifelong Longhorn and a proud Navy veteran as well. He's helped folks around the state, including several former UT athletes, with mortgages. So give him a call today at 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, that's 512-663-4744. Joe Brown is all about integrity. As a matter of fact, my man Bobby Burton knows that personally. He can testify that Joe Brown is not only fantastic to work with, but he's a man of the utmost integrity, and he can help you out today with all of your mortgage needs and concerns. So give him a call, 512-663-4744. Thank you, Joe Brown, for your support of the Sunday night live stream. All right, gentlemen, getting back to it. Before we get some of the questions here, I want to get you guys' thoughts about Terrence Brooks. It's official now, transferring to Illinois. That would make, I believe, out of the 21 players who've transferred in the last two cycles for Texas, let me know if I'm off here, CJ. I know you keep track of, is that 10 of them that are now going to Power 5 programs, Power 4 programs in the future. And then you, I believe there are still maybe three that are undecided among that group. But another one, CJ, going to a Power 5 program. To me, I mean, depending on what he does there and how he contributes, you know, I always look at that as a positive sign of your attrition rates when your players that are leaving your program with for a path to play. Now, Terrence Brooks is different because he was essentially a starter that left, so different situation. But most of the time, guys are looking for a path to play, and that path to play may take them elsewhere, takes them to a place like Illinois where they can contribute there. Shows that guys who are leaving your program are coveted by other programs that are on a similar competitive level as yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly worth the conversation when you go back and you look at the winter portals and what where they ended up. Of course, Trill Carter, Jaron Thompson both ended up at Auburn. Isaiah Nayor was taken on by Nebraska, who actually has a very interesting scholarship situation at the moment. We'll get into in a bit, Rod, because I want to hear your thoughts on it. Malik Murphy, obviously, over to Duke. We're seeing a little bit more of these guys ending up at Power 5 spots out of the spring, which I think is what we expected, because this is really, I would think the more talented, the guys at Texas, you know, probably felt a little bit more of an impact when they departed. Of course, two guys ended up at Arizona State. That was Jermon Tapp and Zach Swanson, who ended up back home. Terrence Brooks, obviously, over to Illinois. Austin Jordan, TCU. And Peyton Kirkland up at Colorado. So you're seeing them being taken on by, some really solid programs, which, to your point, Rod, gives you an understanding of, yeah, Texas has good good talent. And the depth gives you an idea of where they are from a numbers perspective, because these guys would go and they would compete at big P5 programs, whereas they're looking at probably the third string at a number of positions on the Texas roster at the moment. So that gives you an understanding of just how deep Texas is with this roster as well. So it's certainly encouraging that this roster construction is working.
Yeah. I would say this, the Illinois DB coach that was just announced recently, that's David Gibbs. So probably a guy that Chet Brooks has some familiarity with. Terrence Brooks as well. He was the DC at Texas Tech from 15 to 18, DB coach at Missouri. He's recruited Texas a long time.
Okay.
He was also at Houston as a defensive coordinator. He was the Houston Texans DB coach, along with a couple other stops in the NFL. So probably some familiarity there, which helps.
Yeah, no, it's a good point there. Jake has an interesting question for me, and I like this one, and we'll get to some of your questions. So just keep sending them in. We'll try to get through them as many as them as we can. Jake Riddle here says, Rod, if you could coach the DBs, what will be a focus for the season. I feel like we have talent there, but for some reason, there were way too many blown coverages last season. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's talent there, no doubt. They have more talent this season than they even had last season. Of course, bringing in Makuba, I think Manny Muhammad's about to take his game to the level. Derek Williams is a guy I expect to ascend as well. So I think they're going to have even more talent. Sark seems also confident in the talent upgrade at secondary is going to lead to more effective play. I would focus on a few key areas, and these are things that have, I think, have been issues for the Texas secondary over the last 3 years, not just last season. The biggest issue, one of the biggest issues last season is giving up the deep ball. They got to defend the deep ball better, period. Didn't defend it really well in the spring game. Last season, if you just take power, if you take power five starting quarterbacks, all right, just take starting quarterbacks. Remember, Texas played a lot of backup quarterbacks last season. Take those guys out of the mix. If you're taking starting power five starting quarterbacks last year, Texas allowed starting quarterbacks at the power five level to complete 42% of their deep passes, guys. That's a lot. That's a really high number. Yeah, the average is closer to being a 30 to 33%, something like that. And so I would work on number one, defending the deep passes. We saw even in the spring game, right? Way too many deep balls, whether it be blown coverages or guys, you know, with bad leverage, guys not on the upfield shoulder, you know, guys having, you know, failed fundamentals at the line of scrimmage, playing press man, whatever it may be. We got to be in a better position to defend the deep ball. I call it a panic plan. Whether you're going to be in phase or out of phase, you need to know exactly what you're going to do in each situation. If you're out of phase, you're going to know if you're going to play the hands, you're going to play through the eyes, how you're going to play it. If you're in phase, also knowing exactly how you're going to play through the receiver to the football, or just playing the football by eyeing the quarterback. Like, I don't think they have a panic plan a lot of the times. Second, we got to defend inside breaking routes better. Inside breaking routes have killed Texas. Even in the spring game, I won't give you the numbers because I don't want to depress you. All right, because this team is going to be really good. So we're not going to harp on the negative. This is going to be a good team. But they give up inside leverage. I mean, to me, I don't know if it's a coverage dictating the leverage or if the players are allowed to choose their own leverage based on the coverage. Either way, it's way too easy to get inside breaking routes against Texas, and those are easy completions, often the easiest completions. So we're talking about slants, we're talking about glance routes, talking about in cuts, we're talking about post routes, we're talking about six routes, anything that's inside breaking route. Look, going back to the spring game too, go think on any inside breaking routes they got against those Texas DBs. Did Texas DBs make any plays on inside breaking routes? I think it was one of them. That was that Kobe Black interception, was on the inside breaking route. That was one of six routes, covered really well by him. So that's number two. And then targets to closely clustered groups of receivers. Anytime you bring receivers close together, whether it be trips in a bunch formation or tight twins, Texas has a tough time being able to pass off receivers in a switch release. They struggle in the spring game. I keep going back to it. Spring game. Go look at the touchdown by Ryan Wingo at the end of the game, the game-winning touchdown. Switch release. Go look at the first touchdown for Arch Manning on Terrence Brooks, by the way. Switch release. Simple ones. Not complicated switch releases, by the way. Just anytime you have a closely clustered group of receivers, Texas has a tough time passing off those receivers, all right, once they basically have determined where their route's going to be. So my thing would be inside breaking routes, basically covering and defending switch releases, or passing off receivers in coverage and covering the deep ball. Those are the three areas they got to get better at. And if they don't, at least pick one of them. Like, take away the inside cuts. I think it's the easiest thing for them to do is take away the inside breaking routes, because that's a simple leverage. That's two steps inside or a half a step inside. They do that, I think, honestly, that'll help them out tremendously, because a lot of things can be taken away simply with leverage. Because the quarterback is going to read your leverage in the pre-snap. If your leverage is aggressively inside, he's thinking, yeah, all right, I'm not throwing that inside breaking route. There's no damn way, because that guy's aggressively inside. So just based on alignment, a lot of the times, you can take away some of those routes, and the Texas DBs don't do it enough, in my opinion.
Hey, Rod, to add to that, I want your thoughts on this, because somebody asked a question. Is the pass rush, if it takes a big jump next year, how much does that help?
Oh, it helps a lot.
I think it helps a lot. I mean, we've thrown the numbers up. You know, Michigan had, 39 sacks last year as a team. Georgia, 2 years ago, was a little lower, 35, but they were so dominant, it didn't matter. They were 46 the year before, 42 the year before, 40. It was 45. Clemson was 46 the year they won the national championship. Nick Saban's Alabama team's average 41, 42 sacks a season, probably over a decade or something close to that. Texas had 32 last year. That number's got to inch up this year, closer to that 38 to 40 range. for this Texas team to maximize this year. That's where I'm at with this team, Rod. I mean, you need those extra 6-7 sacks. You're affecting launch points. Quarterbacks aren't as comfortable. You're getting people behind the chains. I just think there's so many factors into this. I mean, last year, the big thing was, again, if you look at the Washington game, yeah, Michael Penix made some great throws in that game, but he really hit. There's hits on quarterbacks. When Michigan started hitting Penix early, it changes everything. It's not sacks, right? It's hits as much as sacks. But the more you hit a guy, the more you're going to get him to the ground. So that's going to be a big thing for Texas next year, in my estimation, in helping that pass coverage, because the guys run a little bit faster in the SEC. And if Texas is giving them 4 seconds to throw the ball, they're going to get beat deep. It doesn't matter who you're playing.
Yep. No, I totally agree. Like I said, it would help also when you think about it, just going back to the inside breaking routes thing. If you take away the inside leverage, those are the easy completions. Easy completions are basically a lot of quick game, getting the ball out quickly. You can force the quarterback to hold on the ball just a second longer. It's a half a second longer if you take away some of those easy completions on the inside breaking routes. Then you got to force them to throw the toughest routes, which are outside the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, those are NFL throws between the numbers and the sideline. That's what you – if you can make that throw, then God bless them. I mean, the guys don't play on Sundays. But if most quarterbacks, they don't make those throws with consistent accuracy. And that's what you want to do, try to force him into some inopportune situations like that. So, the DBs are going to be better. I do think they're going to be better, guys. There's no doubt about that. The question is, what types of leaps do we see in terms of their progress? All right, good question there, good conversation. Let's get back to another one of these questions here, because I saw – okay, so here is a question for you guys. CJ, I'll make sure I find it here. Still looking for it. Question for Jerry and CJ. Have you ever interviewed a recruit you wish you never interviewed due to his attitude towards you?
All the time.
Don't name any names. We don't have. Yeah. I don't know. We don't do that. So, but does that happen? Like a guy you meet, you go, he ain't got it. Like this, this kid doesn't have it. Whether it be the attitude or whether it be, you know, just the confidence, like different things that you can gauge in that first meeting and impression.
Yeah. So there's a couple things. Yeah, I've. Especially when I was the ESPN Under Armour days, when I go talk to guys about being in the Under Armour game or whatnot, there were guys I'd come back and say, I'm not staying on the table for this. I'm not going to name names, but yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, look, if I don't think a guy is going to be, I think he's going to be late to an Under Armour team meeting or position meeting or things like that, or, you know, it's just, there's vibes you get. And sometimes it doesn't even come from talking to the kid as much as talking to the coaches and the people around them. There was a guy. I mean, I'll take it way back. There was a quarterback that won a Heisman that one of the coaches from his high school said, I wouldn't bet on this guy making it. The guy won a Heisman. He didn't make it in the NFL, though. He was right long term.
Yeah.
And then there, and Rod, and then I told this story the other day. Then there was a quarterback that signed with Texas that my first impression.
Yeah.
Was a dead fish handshake and a look at the ground. The first time I ever met him, and I remember walking away saying, that guy can't take the ball in front of 100,000 fans and lead Texas to the promised land. No chance, not happening. So there are times where you know both.
Yeah,
it's not often. It's not. A lot of the kids that we cover, I mean, are great. They love the, getting the pictures taken. They like having the interviews up there, the tweets, you know, kind of being recognized for their talent. You know, it's a good trade-off. You know, they get a little bit of shine, we get our information, and then we get to share it with everybody behind the scenes, right? Like, it's a good, healthy, you know, back and forth. But you do come across a couple guys where if Texas does get back into a recruitment late, you're sitting there thinking, oh, boy, like, I don't want to go back and revisit this conversation or relationship. But, I mean, it's part of it. And, again, it doesn't happen too often, but there are a few, and I'm sure it's the case for everybody who's ever had to cover recruiting.
Hey, Rod, and Sark addressed this in the interview. I guess it was with the late kick with Josh Pate, right, who did a good interview.
Yeah.
He talked about taking more risks early on when they were trying to build it at Texas versus now. In setting the culture now and maintaining the culture and not going for a certain recruit or two that could hurt you in the locker room with what you've built. And one of those classic cases early on was, and we talked about this when they took Ajayi Hall, and I know I talked about this, The guy's been to four high schools in 4 years. I mean, and then he transfers from Alabama. That guy hasn't – there's been no consistency anywhere throughout his playing career. So what happened? What you would think happened, right? And kind of when he was if you can't make it for playing for Nick with everything, knowing you're going to win a national championship and get drafted, then your chances of making aren't very high anywhere else.
Yeah. That's fair. That's a good point. I agree with that. And I will say this about the story you told, Jerry, about the young man who, you know, put his head down, didn't keep eye contact. Good young man. Hell of an athlete.
Yes.
Yeah, actually ended up playing in the league, but the quarterback position, it's different. You know what I mean? So it doesn't say nothing about him. And it wasn't like a slight about his character. No. It was about him being a leader of men.
Right. Who do you look to in the locker rooms?
Hey, he's got to be the alpha of the alphas. You got to be the alpha of the alphas, man. There's a lot of alphas in that locker room. None but alphas, as a matter of fact. And you got to be the alpha of those guys. So, yeah, it takes a certain type. That it quality that's really hard to quantify, that je ne sais quoi that you're looking for in a quarterback.
Sticking on this similar conversation of guys that you've seen and recruited and, you know, evaluated, this is a good question from AJJ Sports that just copped in.
Oh, I like it.
Jerry, I know this happens all the time. I mean, I'm more professional scout, evaluator, whatever. So there's guys I miss on rather often. But who's some of those guys that either surprised you and were really impressive in their college or professional careers that you maybe didn't think had it out, or that you were, you know, standing on the table for, pounding the drum for, and they just didn't have it?
That's a great question. Let me think about that. If you have anybody for you, CJ, right now off the top of my head, there's a lot of guys, but I need to think about that. I've been doing this so long, it runs together.
I've got one that I missed on that's actually been a multi-year starter here at Texas, and it's Jake Majors. I'll tell you that right away. I saw him a few times in high school at Prosper. I saw him at the he was undersized a little bit playing the center spot. And you watch his tape at Prosper and you see the nastiness, but then I see him again in person. I'm like, okay, how much does this body have room to grow for? And I saw him at the opening when it was still going on in Frisco, and I wasn't sold. And then I see him in game. I'm like, you know what? We'll see. You know, he could become a starter down the road. I didn't think he'd be starting 4 years and have 50 games under his belt. So credit to Jake Majors for proving me completely wrong on that one. But that's the one that certainly comes to mind the most for me. And I mean, it's always fun when you're wrong in that regard and they go out and they have, you know, 50 career starts, you know, a big time major captain leadership role on a program. That's really, really cool to see. And if that's the case and I'm wrong on that, perfect. I'll take that out.
Here's a crazy one for y'all. Okay. So, and I remember this back from national stuff too. I mean, I was doing Texas stuff, but dabbling national at the time with some ranking stuff. The highest ranked guy, or one of the top two or three highest ranked guys in Nick Saban's 2008 Alabama class, was an offensive tackle out of Stone Mountain named Tyler Love, 5-star recruit. Okay. It just turned out that maybe he didn't love football as much as the other guys. Let me read some names from that recruiting class. And he was arguably the highest ranked guy in that class. Julio Jones, Marcel Darius, Mark Ingram, Terrence Cody, JUCO, Dante Hightower, Barrett Jones, Mark Barron, Damian Square, Burton Scott, Courtney Upshaw, Undra Billingsley. I mean, you go down the list, and Julio Jones was that most highly ranked guy in that class out of all those pros, and he was the guy who maybe didn't love football. It ended up he didn't love football as much. And that's crazy when you think about he was early on. Him or Julio were the highest ranked guy in that class. And Mark Barron, I think, was third. But that's that. Hey, look, it happens. I'll tell you what, and Rod's going to remember this name. You know, one of the most talented guys ever that didn't make it was Ben Gay from Spring.
I remember. Went to Baylor, right?
Yeah, he went to Baylor, but because they still had Prop 48, I guess it was kind of
– I remember. I mean,
he had no grades at all. He was so good, Bobby Bowden still flew in to see him. That was 6'1", 215, and he ran 10.6 in high school, played running back.
Easy.
Man, like rolled out of bed and ran 4.4 like Rod, but he was 215 in high school. Man amongst boys in high school. And he was so good, he never played in a college game, but still was in an NFL training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had like a 100-yard game in an NFL preseason game, but he was never going to make it. But unbelievably talented.
I remember the name too, Lily. And you're right. I don't even know how much he did at the college level either. He was just such a freakish phenomenon out of high school. Everybody knew about the talent of Ben Gay.
He went to Baylor, didn't make it, went JUCO somewhere. That wasn't going to work out. Just ended up in an NFL training camp.
It was, man.
It's hard to do in high school coming from in football now. That doesn't happen very often.
No, he was a thing of a myth and legend back in my day. Everybody knew the name helped too.
He would have had all the incentive to make his grades nowadays. Okay.
Oh man, his Ben Gay NIL deal would have been through the roof.
He would have been a slam dunker guy.
Real quick, Dave, my man David Q. Williams does a great job. I mean, we appreciate him. David's been jumping on this subject for a while, and I want to just address it because I know he's talked about it a couple of times. About the Texas defensive backs. Here it is. My primary bandwagon issue is that Texas needs to develop starters at each position, and those five DBs need to play together as a group and develop cohesion and synchronicity as a group. That is not, I don't disagree with that at all. I do think when I played, it was a different era, and we got a chance to do that. And the group that I played with exclusively all the time. Me and that season, you know, me, whether it was me, Brooks, Quentin Jammer, you know, Nathan Basher. I ended up playing with those guys for a long time because, we didn't rotate a lot of guys. Now, different era of football. I'll admit, we didn't face as many passing plays as these guys face either. We were on the kind of cutting edge of the spread offense, I should say. And remember, Mike Leach came into the Big 12 in 1999 with Bob Leach. I'm sorry, Bob Stoops. And then Mike Leach went to Texas Tech, and then the air raid kind of spreads all throughout. It terraforms the rest of the Big 12 after that. So we're at the beginning of that. So we didn't rotate as many DBs as they do now in more modern football when they face so many plays. So I'm not going to say that they don't need to rotate because they need to keep guys fresh, and Sark wants guys to be fresh for the fourth quarter. That's his goal, fresh for the fourth quarter. So that's why they're rotating. So I'm not to go track how many, like, did they rotate guys, but how often do those rotations shrink in the fourth quarter? As opposed to, are the coaches rotating guys more early in the game so that they can get to the fourth quarter and then shrink the rotations in winning time? And maybe that's what they're doing. So I got to say, I don't like the rotations as much either, but I'm from a different era of football. And I understand now you got to keep guys fresh. And it's worked for Sark, right? Sark said he wants them to be a better fourth quarter team, wants them to be able to close out games, choke the life out of opponents late, and win in clutch time. That's what they're doing. He believes being fresher in the games will do that. So, number one, I got to see, do they shrink the rotations late in the game in the fourth? Because that's what I would do. You know, you can expand rotations in the first and second, right? And CJ, do you know? I mean, I know you got a lot of numbers. I can't say right now. I'll go track it and see if they shrink those rotations in the fourth quarter last season. If they're doing that, then I don't know if there's much else they can do because they're trying to build depth and they're trying to manufacture depth and get some of these young guys experience. So if I would say, if anything, you should have your frontline starters starting more of the reps. So they should be 70% of the reps. Maybe the backups or the other guys contributors, maybe they should be 30% of the reps, somewhere around there, maybe 35% of the reps, and then shrink them as much as you can in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You talk about how many games Texas is expected to play this year, which Sarkisian mentioned it as well. He's looking at it like it's a 15 to 17 game schedule. And if that's the case, you're going to have to play your second and third string guys early on to build that depth, to build that confidence, and allow them the opportunity to see what big time football is like, because they may just be relied upon later in the season to make those big plays that Texas is expecting in December and in July, where it matters the most. Now, my issue a little bit last year was when Texas did rotate. Was it at a point in the game where Texas needed a stop or they needed their big-time guys on the field? If you go back and you look at that Oklahoma game-winning drive, you didn't see many of your elite pass rushers up there. You didn't see your top-end cornerbacks. It was a bit surprising, and I think that's – some coaches have their ways and they don't like to sway from their own tendencies of when they do rotate. But situationally, I think you have to look at it and say, this is the ball game here. I have to get a stop no matter what. And I'm not, going to look at my guys who's tired over on the bench thinking I need to rest him because this is it. You know, you, you have to put your best guys out on the field regardless of the situation, knowing that the game's at stake. So that to me is something I've also talked about, situational awareness for Sarkisian, in a place where he can continue to develop as a head coach, knowing when to take the points, knowing when to go for it and be aggressive. We saw it a few times, Houston, the fake field goal, the fourth down stops on the goal line against BYU a few times at home as well. It kind of adds up at times. And then all of a sudden a game in which you should be blowing a guy out by 25 or 30 is now a 2-touchdown game, and they have the ball driving to make it a 1-score game or cut it. So it just kind of changes a little bit and rotationally, again, knowing the situation, knowing those fourth down stops are so big and acting their own way as a turnover, put your big dogs out there. It's no more hurt feelings. It's all about accomplishing what you want to do, and that's go win an SEC championship, make the college football playoff, and eventually hoist the national championship trophy. So if that's what it's going to take, I think everybody at the end of the day is going to be pretty happy if they're able to come back with some hardware.
Yeah.
Hey, while y'all were talking on that last subject got me thinking. So I want to read something off for all the Texas fans. We almost 1,700 people on here right now. Rod came out of Houston Lamar in the 1999 recruiting class. Some classes at positions hit. I'm going to read off the DBs from the state of Texas that year.
Oh, nice.
Teammate, good friend, Jerome Sapp, Notre Dame, played in the NFL. Jason Frederick, A&M, not so much, right?
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
Rod Babers was ranked top 10 in the state of Texas, behind some guys he should have been ranked ahead of. Kendrick Turner, Dallas Kimball signed with Texas, didn't make it, though, right? But you and Sapp did, okay? But I'm going to get down to some guys. Dakari Pearson, really good career at Texas. Oh. Hit in recruiting rankings, okay?
Freshman All-American, actually.
Sammy Davis, NFL, NFL, A&M. That DB class really hit. Derek Strait, Austin Lanier.
Oh, yeah. Thorpe. Didn't he win a Thorpe?
Yeah. I mean, look, Rufus Brown, FSU, I think he played briefly in the NFL. So there's some classes that hit. The DBs in Texas that year, B.J. Ward, Dallas Kimball, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That DB class that Rod came out with in 99 was Terrence Keel. NFL.
Second round, I think.
Guys were ranked top 50 in the state at DB that class. Yeah. So sometimes we have strong classes at positions and they actually hit. That 99 DB class, Rod was part of it. That one hit big.
It was. That was a good – no, you're right about that, Jerry. I remember thinking, I was like, man, there's a lot of good DBs in this class. And Texas got a bunch of them that year, right? Texas got it was me.
Yeah, Monty Collier. Monty Collier. Who's been out by some of you guys there at Texas from Dallas, Carter, was a very fast – Marvin Jackson, Ball.
Oh, yeah, Galvin Ball.
ROJC. He made it a little bit in the NFL. I was going down the list here. Yeah. I mean, so that was a – tremendous. Michael Jolivet was good at Arizona from North Shore.
Yeah. Hey, man, he was
an all-world players. Yeah. Man. I mean, those DBs, that class. And look at this. Here's one that hit in recruiting. I'm just going back through some old Marcus Tubbs, because he was ranked as a tight end. 230-pound tight end out of DeSoto, was ranked about 60 in the state of Texas, ended up being a first-round pick. Yeah. So, that's a lot of times where guys hit too is, you know, maybe you're a different position. You're that guy that ends up being a D lineman. Henry Melton was a highly ranked kid, but as a running back, he was never going to play running back. So, I mean, you know, that class, Antonio Moore signed with Texas, but that class in state, Rod, LaMarcus McDonald, Jelani's dad was ranked 70th. He was all conference like 3 years. So,
hold on. Was he in that class?
Yeah.
Damn, I'm old. Are you serious? Right,
here's another one. Brandon Everidge from Granger at Oklahoma.
I remember him.
In the NFL, I think that class. And how about, dude, Rod? This is crazy. Who was ranked top 80 in the state of Texas in 1999 at Aldine High? A center named Kelvin Banks Sr.
Whoa,
was in your class, Rod.
What?
Yep,
that is crazy.
Yep.
Okay, now I'm tripping. But you know what? Now that kind of makes sense. Man, I feel so old. I cannot believe this, actually. Now I feel older than I did before.
Kelvin Banks' dad was ranked 65 spots below you in the state of Texas.
That makes sense. Oh, you know what? You know what? I just followed Kelvin Banks Sr. because he was following me. And that was probably why. He's like, dude, we were in the same class together, bro. We got to reach the bond. All right. So my bad. My bad, Kevin Banksy. I should have known that, man. We tight like that. I did not know I was that old. Damn, I feel old. Damn, I should have a kid right now being recruited, or should be on campus right now being recruited or on his way to the NFL like those guys.
And James Lee said Brandon Everett just passed, as has Terrence Keel. Absolutely.
Terrence Keel, yes. So sad. You're right. Was it a car accident or something with Terrence Keel?
I don't remember.
I'm not sure what it was. Yeah, you're right about that. RIP, man, to those guys. I actually knew Terrence Keel really well because he's hanging out with Sammy Davis. I was actually roommates with Sammy Davis at the rookie symposium. Yeah. Rookie symposium. And actually, when we were at the combine, we hung out a little bit at the combine too, because he was at the combine with me. Those Aggies, actually, they're at the combine with me. I got to know those guys really well. Yeah, so RIP to them, man. That's really sad. All right, getting back to some of the questions here. Matter of fact, Jerry, I got a question for you real quick.
Yeah.
I got CJ's thoughts about this. What are your thoughts about the supposedly leaked EA Sports video game cover that, like I said, this is the deluxe edition that was alleged leaked, with Quinn Ewers and Travis Hunter, Edwards from Michigan? Those are the three jerseys that are most recognizable and most notably featured on the cover. But then in the background, there are some other players that are seen. Judkins, you can see Carson Beck out in the distance there a little bit. Jalen Milroe off in the distance, you can see him. So they basically made it kind of a more inclusive cover.
So who are So here you go, man. I'll say this. This is what's crazy. This is crazy. This is where we joke a little bit about Deion Sanders, right, about kind of how crazy it is at Colorado. Blue blood, Texas, blue blood, Michigan, Deion Sanders. I mean, that's the reality is, if Deion Sanders had never been the head coach at Jackson State, Travis Hunter signs with Florida State.
National championship running back with two touchdowns in that game, a quarterback that made the college football playoffs, a third-year starter, one of the highest rated recruits of all time, a kid off of a 4-8 team.
I mean, exactly. But it shows you the power of NIL nowadays, right? I mean, and the power of what is Deion Sanders was NIL before NIL, right? I mean, that's what he was, but he's perfect for NIL, by the way. Yes. But the two blue bloods in the what Deion's done at Colorado, however many games they win or not, he got Travis Hunter with him at two stops, and look at that. I mean, look where they're at. That's pretty powerful, but that's unbelievably awesome for Texas and Quinn and the University of Texas brand. Obviously, you expected Michigan, somebody from Michigan, to be there coming off the national championship. But that is amazingly good for the University of Texas and for Quinn Ewers. Look, guys, I mean, here's the reality, too. Quinn transferring back to Texas was huge for the University of Texas program. No matter if you think he's going to be a first-round pick or second-round pick, if you think he hasn't been as good as you thought, or not, him coming back from Ohio State to Texas when he did was a huge deal for Steve Sarkisian and the University of Texas.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree with that 100%.
Talking about that college football 25 game, you know, how big is it for Texas to have that marketing, be on the cover or the deluxe cover, whatever it is? You could probably expect another Longhorn in, you know, a year or two to be on that cover. Mm-hmm. If you catch where I'm going there as well. Right. Not in the game this year, but we might just be seeing him grace that cover down the road.
Hey, look, we're just talking about anybody. That's easy.
That's easy money. I'd put money on that right now if I could bet on it. I don't bet a lot. I don't put a lot of money down on bets. I'd put money down on the bet that in the next 2 years, or after Quinn is done, I should say that Arch Manning will grace the cover of the game in some way, form, or fashion.
100%. KB asked, any more portal guys? We have two roster spots left. Outside shot, D-line would be more developmental guy, maybe punter, maybe another DB, nothing strike right now, but we'll see. So grad transfer could pop up.
Yep.
We got a super chat here. Thank you, Justin. We appreciate you throwing out a super chat. Thank you for the love, guys. How close is talent level for us to take less portal guys than we have the past 2 years? Also, Jerry, my wife is taking us to Jupiter, Florida next month. Need food spots to check out. So I'm sure Jerry can hook you up.
Oh, yeah. So I would hit Shangri-La first. Utiki and anywhere on Love Street. You want to, if it's just you and the wife, or if there's no kids, you got to go to Square Grouper after. I mean, those, if you do that, you're good. 1000 North, Michael Jordan's restaurant, super expensive. The wow. Woods Tiger Sports Bar is really cool from how setup is. I know too much about this place, but I did live there a while. Guanabana's is more of the that's more of where the tourists go, but not the spot. Utiki, Love Street, right next to Utiki, Square Grouper for a couple of drinks late. All those places you're looking at the Intracoastal, you're looking at the Lighthouse. Can't go wrong anywhere there.
Boom.
And as far as portal guys, Rod, I don't know what y'all thought. I know y'all have seen the same interviews with Steve Sarkisian. The guy's going to build the most talented roster he can every year without sacrificing culture moving forward, whatever that means. But here's the thing. I don't see Texas backing off of portal guys in the future, because there's no excuse for being an inexperienced team in college football anymore, and Steve Sarkisian knows it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And especially with the way that, you know, this roster construction is being available. You look at Nebraska. I mean, they have 95 scholarship players on their roster at the moment, and they're treating them as NIL scholarships. So they're not technically going to be on scholarship, because you have to be below 85 or at 85 for the fall season. That's an interesting move to just let NIL take care of what would have been a scholarship, to allow these kids to remain on roster, to play that extra, you know, developmental snaps, kind of keep your roster depth in check. Because again, you could be looking at 15, 16, 17 games. I think Nebraska might be a year away, but they have the quarterback now. And they certainly do have the aspirations to return to what they were in the 90s. And if that's the case, you're going to need all the bodies you can to get that done.
Yeah, it's very interesting, man. That's talk about a cheat code that you can bring guys on, pay them through NIL, but also pay for all the things they would usually get on a scholarship, of course. But they pay through NIL so you can add high-level players to your roster without having them on scholarship, man. That is it sounds like you're cheating, but you're not. You're just playing the game. This is the game now, and it's a huge advantage for a lot of programs out there. Good stuff there, CJ. I want to real quick, before we get back to it, we get close to the end here, I want to thank our sponsor one more time. We are very thankful to Joe Brown and everything that he has done to support us here at On Texas Football, including supporting our Sunday night live stream here. Special thanks to Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. That's right, folks. Joe has been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than 3 decades. It's a long time. Joe's a lifelong Longhorn fan and also a proud Navy veteran as well. He's helped folks around the state, including several former UT athletes, with their mortgages. So please give him a call today. 512-663-4744. It's 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, please give Joe Brown a call. 512-663-4744. Thank you very much to Joe Brown for all of his support. I really appreciate that. David Keith Williams has a question here, gentlemen. Who do you think are the best 4D tackles for UT to get in their 2025 recruiting class? My 3 and 4 options have changed, but 1 and 2 are definitely Brandon Brown and Zion Williamson. Thank you for the question there, David Keith Williams.
The reason I brought that up, I wanted to kind of go through the week on the road real quick, because I want to say this. Texas is absolutely on the right guys in this class. Now, They're gonna have to hit on probably 50% of the guys that are the top guys coming in for visits. So Brandon Brown, saw him last week. He's gonna end up being 6'1", 6'1 and a quarter, around 300 pounds, what he'll play. But again, long arms for his height, 10 1/4 inch hands. Derry Norris, Spruce Creek, who I think will be officially visit June 21st through 23rd, and I think it's Texas, Miami, top two, Florida's trying right now, and that is where it'll end up. 6'4", 270, 10 1/2 inch hands, 79-inch wingspan. Myron Charles, 6'4", 280, hasn't even really begun to develop yet. 81-inch wingspan, 10 1/4 inch hands. Kevin Green was 6'2", 315, without shoes on, great size, big barrel-chested kid he's going to be. 10 1/4, 10 1/2 inch hands. I mean, Zion Williams, 6'4 1/2, 325, 10 1/2 inch hands. Texas, Josiah Sharma, I haven't seen him in person, but he has measured on a campus, 6'4", 307, over 10-inch hands. So Texas is in on the right guys. I mean, 100% in on the right guys. They're going to end up having to win half of those battles for those top guys. Or how I would order them right now, I mean, tough call. I will say this. I put 6 in a different category, and Texas needs to hit on half of them. And that is Brandon Brown, That's Josiah Sharma. That's Kevin Wynn. That's Zion Williams. That's Myron Charles. And that's Derry Norris. I think if Texas hits on half of those guys, they have three really, really, really good D linemen in the class. Then if you take a fourth, which I think Texas will, who will that fourth be? Would it be a developmental guy like DJ Sanders? Would it be a kid like Chase Sims, whose body's really advancing maybe quicker than a DJ Sanders is? Is there somebody else that they're really going to find here in the last couple weeks in May that Texas may bring in for an official visit in June? I think that's the thing. But those six guys I hit on, I think they're in on the right guys, but they're going to have to hit 50%. And this is D-line recruiting. It's hard to do.
Yeah, it's good stuff there, Jared. Appreciate that information. Appreciate you guys with all of your chats, the questions, all the super chats. We appreciate that as well. We'll get a couple of more in before we get out of here. But I do want to ask you guys, so do we think officially, but I'll throw it out to you, CJ, to you first, Texas done in the portal? Do we think it is Texas is done in the portal, or do you think Texas still intrigued, or at least still open to the possibility of bringing in someone else?
Yeah, I think there certainly is the, you know, the availability for them to go out and look at guys. It has to be the right fit, maybe a grad transfer, maybe a guy with depth experience, or if you're at a spot where, you know, you look at the defensive line and you need a guy that's younger to keep a body in the room for the 2025, 2026 seasons, it makes sense. You know, you have room to work if you're Steve Sarkisian and the Texas program at the moment. It makes sense to go out and add an experienced punter. You know, we've seen how big of a weapon that's been for Jeff Banks and this program in recent years. It makes all the sense in the world for Texas to go out there and add to that room with a veteran guy. We'll see, of course, who does become available as a grad transfer or, you know, anything along the lines of that. But right now, I think Texas is at least milling around, you know, uncovering every rock, basically, yeah, in this portal. Because, again, if you have the opportunity to add and fill up to 85 roster spots, why would you not? As Jerry's been saying all along, there's no reason to be, you know, thin at any depth spots. So it makes sense to fill it up.
Yeah. When Sark was asked by Josh Pate, you know, what are your biggest concerns about the roster? What potentially could derail things for you in this upcoming season? He pointed out D tackle, which we know he's been concerned about it. He's voiced his concern openly several times, and he's brought in three new D tackles via the transfer portal. And he also said wide receiver because of the losses at wide receiver, the chemistry with Quinn. He talked about that being a concern for him. He did not talk about the defensive backs at all. For those who are thinking that, I think there's a reason Sark is not concerned about the DBs. It could just be, hey, he has seen these guys behind the scenes. He knows how potent and prolific his offense is. He's like, those guys can cover anybody else in the country. They just can't cover my guys on it. It could be that. Or my thought, honestly, guys, I think it's a Johnny Nansen thing. I really do. I think he believes Johnny Nansen is going to bring in some exotic looks that are really going to discombobulate and fluster opposing quarterbacks. And he knows that his veteran guys are going to be able to execute those, similar to the way they did in Arizona. And I think he believes that's going to give them an edge because of the edges in pass defense. So that's my theory. I think just a theory. I don't know that for a fact, but Sark is way too calm about the secondary considering what we watch. So if he's calm about it, I trust Sark. At this point, he's earned my trust. So if he's calm about it, I will worry less. Yes, Ryan, I am still concerned. Rod B is still concerned. Yes, I am concerned, but not as much. Not as much. I'm going to trust in Sark on that one. All right. So Dave says, Rod, when I put you in the new game, how much NIL do I have to offer you to keep you from going to A&M? Honestly, that is a great question. Honestly, a smart 17-year-old, 18-year-old Rod B will make the right decision. And I did back then. I went to Texas. That was a right decision for me. Trust me. Even going back, no matter how much NIL money that A&M offered me, if Texas wasn't offering me less, I should take the Texas offer. The Texas offer would be the better offer for the 40-year decision, not the 4-year decision. I would have liked to think I would have made the right decision back then, but, and man, NIL is a mofo, man. It's a game changer. It is a game changer. All right. Any last comments for you guys before we get out of here, Jerry?
Yeah, I got one. Thank you to everybody for the continued support, man. I mean, this isn't a big deal, but it is to us and for all you guys. We're closing on 46,000 subscribers to this YouTube channel. We are now number two as far as any college team. And we can't do that without all of you guys passing the word to all your friends and fellow Longhorns. Thank you so much for continuing to support us. We've grown about 40,000 in the last year, guys. I mean, and we love doing this. And I tell Texas fans all the time, I mean, look, it was a 2,500-mile trip, whatever it ended up being. I can't even remember. But it's fun to come on here and talk about it every day. You guys make it fun. So as we get closer to 50,000 and eventually take over that number one spot in about a year, 18 months from now, man, thank you guys for being a part of it and helping us grow. It means a lot.
Yep, I agree with that, brother. No doubt about it. It's honestly, it's the best part of my day coming on here, talking Texas football with you guys. It is truly a family, a community. That's what we're building, and it's because of you guys. So Jerry's right. Thank you guys for all of your support, man. We really appreciate it. And the team continues to grow. We brought on CJ. Yep. I knew we were going to do big things. That was huge. I was a big fan of CJ even before we brought him on. We brought him on. I told Bobby and my man Jerry, I was like, oh, yeah, we're about to blow up, and we're going to continue to grow. Thanks to you guys. So we appreciate you, man. Also, like Jerry said, become an OTFOG, by the way, on Texas football. Go check that out, OTFOG. That's right. You can get $20 off becoming an OTFOG for your annual subscription. So you can do that as well. So I want to make sure that we throw that out there. That's also a community that continues to grow because of all of your support. So thank you guys so much. All right. Thank you to our sponsor, Joe Brown. Joe Brown, we appreciate you and all of your love. Thank you guys for everything. Thanks, my man, CJ Vogel. He's awesome. Thanks to Jay. CJ, be safe on that road, by the way. Both of you guys, because all y'all always on the road. You be safe on the road too, Jerry. Thanks to Jerry Hamilton. Thanks to you guys out there for listening. Thanks from the On Texas Football family. Until next time. Oh, you got coffee and football tomorrow, right, yes, Joe?
We do. Tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, JerMichael Finley scheduled.
He just graduated, right? Did he just walk?
Graduated. Talk about his graduation. Talk about Caden Finley, who Jeff Banks and Chris Jackson went to watch work out at Aledo last week and is very much on the radar in 26.
Yeah, I got to see that young man. I went to a football camp courtesy of Anthony Williams, who's the dad of Aaron Williams, one of his camps. And I got a chance to meet the young man. He's awesome. I love his personality, love the way he works. And I wouldn't mind having him a part of the family. We love legacies at the University of Texas. Okay. Love that. All right. For my man Jerry, for CJ, until next time, folks, until tomorrow, hook 'em.
Welcome. Y'all have a good one.